I mean, they're down to the point where they're actually smelling the core samples. These folks are serious about this project.
The Walker administration releases the gas pipeline agreement with China. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 21st. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, a young Yupik Carver looks to his grandfather for inspiration.
Just from reading his background, it made me want to carry on the tradition in the family name, because there's not many Carvers left in the Charles family.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
At a news conference this morning, Governor Bill Walker unveiled the new gas pipeline agreement he signed in China earlier this month. Walker, with Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation President Keith Meyer, talked about what they hope will come out of the agreement. Meyer says Alaskans will see significant progress on the proposed gas pipeline megaproject next year.
There's going to be trips to China, trips from them to Alaska. So a lot of due diligence, a lot of papering. We've got a multi-billion dollar purchase agreement, lending agreement, investment agreement. We've got a regulatory process that we're trying to get through by the end of next year.
The other parties to the agreement are three Chinese government-owned entities that could act as customers, investors, and partial owners on the project. Under the agreement, Alaska and China will work together to develop a plan that could make Alaska's LNG megaproject feasible. The framework gives China the opportunity to take 75% of the liquefied natural gas produced by the project in exchange for providing 75% of the funding to build it. The remaining portion of the funding to build the project, or around $11 billion, would be paid for by the Gasline Corporation and its partners. According to a media release, the corporation envisions getting that funding from a combination of Alaska Native corporations, cities, and private investors, issuing tax-exempt bonds and state money. Meyer says the Chinese partners have visited Alaska and are considering the project carefully.
I mean, they're down to the point where they're actually smelling the core samples. These folks are serious about this project. We have an electronic data room that they have spent hundreds of hours in due diligence. Their government folks have talked to our government folks, not just the state folks, but the federal folks, to see, is the U.S. going to be receptive? Is the U.S. Congress going to be receptive? And they've had very positive feedback on that.
The agreement calls for the group to make a final decision to partners on the project by the end of 2018. In its current form, the project is estimated to cost $43 billion to build and could temporarily add 12,000 jobs to Alaska's economy. Congress could be one step closer to undoing a U.S. Forest Service decision to end old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest. On Monday, Senator Lisa Murkowski added the measure to a Senate Interior and Environment Appropriations bill. Last year, the Forest Service included new directives to its Tongass plan. Timber industry groups and conservationists thought the decision was final. The Forest Service would transition away from cutting old-growth trees. But in October, the Government Accountability Office decided the Forest Service plan was subject to congressional review. It would be up to both the Senate and House to make the final call. There are no committee meetings scheduled yet to discuss the issue. Technology that removes fine particulates from wood and coal stove smoke is being readied for testing in North Pole. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, it's part of a citizens' science project.
Local veterinarian Gene Olson and a group of other Citizens for Clean Air members installed the electrostatic precipitator device in the wood stove pipe at Olson's North Pole clinic last week. Olson says it's awaiting final check.
To make sure that it's centered right and isn't going to arc. I haven't lit the fire in my stove to check that yet, but I'm planning to do that this week, and we're working on getting some instruments to test the emissions in all different conditions this winter.
Olson received the $2,000 Swiss-made unit called an Eco Tube from company representative Nico Lauer. Lauer traveled to Fairbanks last week to deliver and help install the stack-mounted device, which creates a low-power electric field inside the stovepipe.
And this electric field basically ionizes the particles that go through it. They get charged electrically, and because of the electric charge, it gets attracted to the chimney and deposits there. Takes up all the fine dust out of the smoke.
Electrostatic precipitator technology has a long history of use in power plants and other industrial applications. The EcoTube residential size unit has been available for 6 years, but only in the U.S. since September. Lauer says two others have been installed in the United States, but thousands are in use in several other countries, and it should work here too.
We have no doubts whatsoever that's going to function right away. My recommendation is that you do probably a season's worth of testing to get the assurance that this thing operates well.
We don't have the information necessary to really evaluate its functioning under our conditions.
North Star Borough Air Quality Control Commission Vice Chair Kathy Cahill has a PhD in atmospheric science and 3 decades experience studying air pollution. She says proving the effectiveness of the EcoTube will require thorough local testing.
Yes, they've used it other places in the world, but they don't have a long track record of working with the kinds of fuels we work with. So I'm definitely interested in seeing how this is actually going to function.
Cahill applauds the citizen science project that Dr. Olson and Citizens for Clean Air have undertaken in North Pole. She says the borough does not have the capacity to test the EcoTube.
At the moment, having people watch what's happening at Jeannie Olson's house in terms of how the ESP works is going to be a key first step, and then we can try to see if we can apply for grants for pilot projects.
EcoTube's Lauer says the company has already gotten the units certified in other countries and is willing to go through the process in the U.S.
If there's issues about certification by the EPA, we'll be delighted to do it. Needless to say, it's approved around the other countries in the world where people are using it.
The technology was brought to local attention by Borough Assembly member Lance Roberts, who sponsored an ordinance to allow people who install the devices on their stovepipes to be able to operate them during local burn bans triggered by poor air quality. The measure, which is pending before the Assembly, also proposes that qualifying residents be able to be reimbursed the cost of the device through a borough-subsidized program. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, 2 Alaskan artists win prestigious grants.
I tell you, I was smiling all day that day, and I couldn't tell anybody. It's hard when you find out some good news.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ExxonMobil Alaska. Their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here. Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
The special legislative session has ended quietly in Alaska, more than a week after the state Senate called it quits. The House opted to run the clock out on the session in the hopes that the Senate would address concerns on a crime bill that both chambers passed and then take up taxes. Neither happened before the session hit its 30-day limit today. Governor Bill Walker has said he intends to sign the crime bill, despite constitutional concerns flagged by the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska. Walker expressed frustration that action wasn't taken on his employment tax proposal, but spokesman Jonathan Taylor says the governor won't call another special session before lawmakers reconvene in January. Southeast communities are always looking at ways to reduce the amount of trash that ends up in their landfills or that they have to ship south. In Ketchikan, people can come up to the landfill and take what they want. That saves the city money and space. KRBD's Layla Carey reports on Ketchikan's salvage problem, part of Coast Alaska series Talkin' Trash.
I love the dump. I go to the dump for all of my wearable art needs. That's where I go first.
Ketchikan artist Holly Knoyer says the local landfill is a great place to gather materials for the large, complicated pieces she makes for Ketchikan's popular wearable art show. Knoyer also goes there when helping to build sets for First City Players, the city's community theater.
We're making trees right now for Shrek Jr., the children's musical. And we need tall things that will not break. And the dump is a great place to go and find things for free.
Nyssa Dash is another Ketchikan artist who loves the landfill. She's helping Kanoyer with sets for Shrek Jr., but she also gathers material for her own art. Dash has a penchant for the patina of rusty metal.
And I have to be careful because I will haul things. I'll go to the dump and then, I have to sneak it because, like, I have stuff in the garage and then, like, in little places, tucked things away because, and God forbid we have to move because it's going to be, like, too many stuff.
Honey,
that
I need to bring my rust collection.
Exactly.
Those two aren't alone in their scavenging. Up at the landfill, surrounded by opportunistic ravens, solid waste supervisor Lenny Neely says about 40 people are signed up for the city's salvage permit program. He says they take more than 100 tons of stuff out of the landfill every year. That's 200,000 pounds.
And some way, shape, or form, all that material's getting reused. That's the nice part of it.
Yeah. No, that's just amazing that they take out that much stuff.
That's a lot of volume.
It really is.
When you think about it.
That saves the city money in a variety of ways. It reduces the workload, cuts back on space taken up by trash, and reduces the volume of items the city has to barge south. Neely says it's tough to know exactly how much money the city saves a year. For some context, though, the city pays almost $60 per ton to ship household garbage south. Beyond art material, Neely says salvagers collect for commercial use. Popular material includes metal pipes and wooden boards, often discarded after a home remodel. Neely points to a tangle of copper pipe sitting on the ground next to the fill.
But like this piece laying here, whoever came up and dumped laid that there because they know that, hey, a salvager grabbed that.
The person who picks it up likely is after metal they can sell for scrap. But there's other salvageable stuff in the fill.
I mean, the possibility, I guess, is the foosball table.
Uh-huh.
I see some metal over there that somebody will grab. Bicycles are a big item.
So people just throw out?
We get a lot of bicycles,
huh.
For whatever reason, and seems to be a bigger item. But just a little bit of everything.
I see a bike right over there.
Neely says he was surprised by Ketchikan's salvage permit program when he first came to work at the landfill years ago, mostly because of the liability.
But the reality is here, it's worked really well, and that's recycling at its finest. When I first got here, I couldn't believe. I was like, we do what? And we may be one of the only very few places in the state that do that.
Liability is one concern cited by other regional facilities, although Wrangell used to have a salvage program before it capped its landfill years ago. Petersburg has something similar to Ketchikan's salvage program. The fill there is open for salvagers just twice a week, though, and the permit fee is quite a bit higher, $10 per day versus $5 a month in Ketchikan. Ketchikan's landfill requires permit holders to sign a waiver, wear a safety vest, and stay out of the fill when equipment's running. Back at the First City Players building, Kanoyer leads a set building workshop for kids participating in the Shrek Jr. production. She says when she's on the hunt for supplies, she goes to the landfill daily. She shows off some of her recently salvaged items, discarded Christmas decorations, metal tomato plant cages, and a big bag of fabric leaves.
We have two long bamboo sticks that are 12-footers from the dump. You don't find that very often anymore, so it's a real treasure to find that. Tied that sucker on top of my truck, and I hit the road.
Salvage success. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The weather is a popular conversation topic at any Thanksgiving dinner. So just in time for the holiday, we have a heaping serving of Thanksgiving in Alaska weather facts you can pass around your table along with the stuffing and potatoes. Brian Brentschneider from our Ask a Climatologist segment compiled the list. He says in Alaska, Thanksgiving means winter. And that was certainly the case back in 1994 from the North Slope to Southeast.
Average temperature was -6 for all the stations. And so that's the lowest we can find for any year on record. Now, there are other years, like 1917, where all-time cold records for Thanksgiving were set in the interior, but it was much warmer along the Gulf of Alaska coast and southeast. So when you average all those together, it didn't turn out to be as cold. But for the whole state, 1994 was the coldest on record. So looking at the warmest year, if you go back to 1943, the average statewide temperature was about 38 degrees. So on average, it was above freezing. Now, that's a temperature that's an average of the high and the low. So the high was actually warmer. It was about 40, low 40s for the state. So even up in the interior, above freezing conditions, not quite to the North Slope, but then much warmer down in southeast as well.
Okay, and then moving on to my favorite topic, snow. What are some of the snow records?
Some really kind of exceptional snow events have occurred on Thanksgiving in previous years. Going back to 1950, way down in southeast, the Beaver Falls station had 28.5 inches of snow. And that's more than any other station has recorded on any Thanksgiving. And these records go back to the early 1900s. The interesting thing is Beaver Falls is the station in Alaska that has the lowest annual snowfall total. So they actually got about one full season's worth of snow in that one Thanksgiving in 1950.
Wow.
Yeah, and then one of the other key climate measurements we take is snow depth. And so if you go back only 2 years, back to 2015, the Chulitna River Station, kind of east of the Parks Highway up in the Denali High Country, they had a snow depth of about 70 inches. And so that's the greatest for any station on record. And closer to Anchorage, Turnagain Pass back in 2007 had a 60-inch snow depth. So that's the second highest for any station on any Thanksgiving in the climate record.
Okay, and turning to rain?
When we look at the entire state for precipitation, we've had a couple of really, really wet Thanksgivings and then several really dry Thanksgivings. Keep in mind that down in southeast, November is still part of the wet season. Up in the interior, we're really transitioning to the real cold season. Precipitation does tail off, and of course it's all snow. But back in 2014, if you look at all the stations in the state, 142 stations reported a grand total of 1 inch of precipitation, and then that was down in southeast. So basically it was dry across the entire state. And then 1969, 151 stations recorded 60 inches of precipitation. Again, a lot of that was in southeast, but a lot of it also was in the interior. And so that was the year that we would say was the wettest on record.
Okay. Do you have any other favorite records for Thanksgiving?
Last year, we talked about a white Thanksgiving. So that would be snow on the ground or new snow that falls on Thanksgiving. And Fairbanks is going to extend their run of white Thanksgivings to 82 in a row. You have to go back to the early 1930s to find a brown Thanksgiving, if you will. And Anchorage averages are having a white Thanksgiving about 84% of the years. We're going to have one this year. We didn't have one for the last 5 years. We've had kind of a run here lately where we haven't had a white Thanksgiving. And Juneau really only has it about a third of the time, but they have a pretty healthy snowpack right now. It's greater than it is in Anchorage or in Fairbanks. So they're going to kind of win the big city snow contest for this Thanksgiving.
Brian Brentschneider is a climatologist in Anchorage. He checks in with Alaska's Energy Desk each week as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. In what has become an annual tradition, Matanuska Susitna Borough employees donated enough food Monday to feed Thanksgiving dinners to nearly 60 needy families. The borough workers offered up all the fixins, turkey, stuffings, and pies included. The food goes by truck to Alaska Family Services, which adds it to other donations and distributes the meals to a total of about 200 families. Char Averill, a unit supervisor at the Matsu landfill, has led the borough's efforts for the last 2 years.
We love our community. That's why we work here and live here. We're neighbors, and we want to help out. You know, we're all just a few paychecks away from needing help, so it's really easy task for me. All I have to do is send out an email, and my email's overwhelmed with responses, people wanting to participate and give.
The borough says the food drive has been going on for over a decade.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Humanities Forum grants support creative projects that share the stories of Alaska and explore what it means to be Alaskan. Get details and apply at akhf.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Humanities Forum. Going without health insurance could be financially devastating. Healthcare bills are the leading cause of personal bankruptcy. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is November 1st through December 15th. A household of four with an annual income of less than $123,000 may qualify for federal tax credits to help cover premium costs. Get signed up for health insurance at healthcare.gov today. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Alaska is well represented among recipients of the 2017 Joan Mitchell Foundation's Grant Awards for painters and sculptors. There were only 25 winners from around the country, and two of them are Alaskans, Anchorage residents Sonia Keller-Combs and Drew Michael. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, the grantees received $25,000 each, along with some well-deserved recognition.
Sonia Keller-Combs was with family when her phone rang. She describes her reaction like this.
Complete shock. You know, all I could say was thank you, thank you, thank you. And of course, my aunt and uncle were there and we were eating breakfast. It was a very exciting moment.
Exciting, Keller-Combs says, because she knows how competitive the Joan Mitchell Foundation grants are. But because the foundation had other calls to make and press releases to write, they asked her not to tell anyone.
I'll tell you, I was smiling all day that day and I couldn't tell anybody. It's hard when you find out some good news.
Keller-Combs' work, just to mention a couple pieces, includes evocative, colorful paintings, as well as sculptures of walrus stomach and porcupine quills, a combination of her Inupiaq and Athabascan heritage. In general, she says, her art features themes of place, community, and identity, specifically the ongoing struggle in defining oneself and discovering identity.
Tied into all of that is issues of Alaska, colonization, also our relationship to the land, conflict of Western and Indigenous culture, things like that.
The foundation's nomination process is confidential, so Keller-Combs doesn't know who submitted her name. The foundation's Painters and Sculptors Grant Program began funding under-recognized artists, as they put it, in 1994. Since then, only one other artist living and working in Alaska has won a grant, though there have been other Alaska Native awardees living elsewhere. Keller-Combs' fellow grantee, Drew Michael, says he was also surprised and honored to get the phone call.
They did happen to choose two people from Alaska, and my eyebrows rose for sure. Kind of cool.
Michael says he's thrilled to have $25,000, but maybe more important is the spotlight on his artwork, the continuing support, and the connection to other artists. Michael says his art is rooted in his culture, both Yupik and Inupiaq, and he has evolved from carving masks to sculpting.
Oftentimes I'm looking through the lens of finding healing or balance, thinking about how we carry energy in our body and how we connect to the world around us, whether it be in relationships with people or maybe animals in the world around us and the spirit world, the places that are unseen.
Michael says the funding will help him make art with new materials like glass and metal and perhaps get it to new places where it too has so far been unseen. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
Walk into a courtroom, a legislative office, or even the governor's mansion, and you'll find art. Masks, paintings, textiles, sculptures, each piece created by an Alaska artist, curated by the state, and held in the Alaska Art Bank. A Yupik mask from Bethel artist Ben Charles is one of its most recent acquisitions. Charles is 34 years old and only began carving in February. Anna Rose MacArthur visited him at his home studio in Bethel and has this audio postcard.
The piece is representative of the cloudy sky spirit. It represents the spirit that takes the person's spirit away and brings it to the next universe or plane. My uncle passed away from cancer, and I was thinking of him when I made it. And when I was carving it, I was thinking that he went on to the next life safely. It's made of spruce root, and I found it when I was out getting firewood this past winter. As I was driving back, there was a big piece of spruce root sitting on the side of the river. And I just chopped it up and brought it home. So the piece is cut in half and the opposite sides of the face are on either side. And it's carved in a curve and it's blue and white. Well, one side is white and one side is blue with the circles of the universe and the earth and the solar system and the four dots for the four winds above the eye, and also dots with circles inside along the side of the face where the cut was. No one taught me, and I just studied my grandpa's and my dad's pieces and kind of looked at how they might have carved it in reverse. I started my online art business for Alaska Native Art over a year ago, and I needed more inventory. And my wife got me this book about my grandpa, Nick Charles, or Nicholas Charles. His Yupik name was Ayaganok. He was a pretty famous carver back in the early to mid-90s. One of the quotes in there is that you wake up every day and it's a new day. And with the new day comes new opportunity, I believe is the rough quote on that. And just from reading his background, it made me want to carry on the tradition in the family name, because there's not many carvers left in the Charles family. I think he passed away when I was 6 or 7, but I used to watch him carve when I was a kid. He had this little room and he would be hunched over with a old desk lamp with his old traditional carving tools and his cotton like button sweater and a plaid shirt and these dress up pants, and he would be sitting there carving quietly. A lot of masks. I think I remember him making a bent wood bowl and some dance fans. I didn't really start paying attention to the Yupik culture until several years ago. I listened, but I didn't listen well enough until just recently. And with the Yupik culture, it's passing knowledge verbally from generation to generation. And for carving, I feel like my dad and my grandpa are there.
Ben Charles is a carver in Bethel. He says he doesn't care if the public official who chooses his piece of art is a Democrat or a Republican. He just wants to inspire people. That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. Weird reports tonight from Rasha McChesney and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Annie Fite and Casey Grove in Anchorage, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.